A story. Nightmare. The first dream I remember having is actually my first nightmare, and it was so lucid and vivid that, although I know it had to have been a dream, in my memory, it's something I remember as actually having happened. I was no more than 3 years old. We lived in a ranch-style house, long and thin. My bedroom was the first room on the left as you went down the hallway, across from the bathroom, next to my older sister's room, with the master suite at the end of the hall. I didn't like being alone in the dark, so when I was put to bed, I'd ask for the bedroom door to be left open and the hallway light to be left on. I could see glimpses of my parents and sister moving up and down the hall, and the slice of light from the hallway coming through the partially open door. It's important to note that, due to my spina bifida, I couldn't get out of bed or walk on my own at this point, so being put to bed had an air of finality and confinement for me that it might not have had for other people. Now, remember that my recollection of this dream, this nightmare, assures me that I was lying in bed fully awake. So this one night, as I lay awake and staring into the hallway looking for glimpses of activity, I saw a figure peek into my room. It looked like a puppet or marionette, not fully adult-sized but definitely bigger than I was, and I think it may have borne some resemblance to Disney's animated Pinocchio, which I'm fairly sure I'd seen in big-screen revival at some point around that time. But Pinocchio hadn't scared me. This thing's face wasn't cute or happy, and it definitely looked real. And Pinocchio hadn't looked this malevolent. I remember it peeking into my room, looking around with its hand on the doorframe and locking eyes with me. Then it briefly disappeared. I closed my eyes, or maybe looked away for a moment, and the next thing I knew it was standing at the foot of my bed and started advancing on me. I pulled the covers over my face, shut my eyes, and screamed for my mother. I remember lights coming on, adults rushing to my bedside, being safe, and the thing being gone. For years after that, I refused to be left in my bedroom after dark or sleep in my own bed. I think I slept with a bedside lamp on for the next 10 years. In order to understand my story, my perspective, and point of view, you'll want to be familiar with a number of tales, such as The Tale of the 12 Dancing Princesses. Oh, you're unfamiliar? Please get comfortable and let me tell it to you. Once upon a time, in a kingdom far, far away, lived a king and his 12 daughters. He had lost his wife and had no intention of losing his daughters, and so they slept all together in 12 beds in one large room, where they were locked in every night and guarded by an old nursemaid. One night, the eldest princess drops a ring behind her bed, and upon moving it to look for the ring, discovers a tiny door in the wall in the back corner of the room. When it is late and everyone else is asleep, she opens the door and creeps her way down. The doorway widens quickly and reveals a staircase, and after descending countless stairs, the princess sees a light at the end of a long hall and can hear music and laughter and the tinkling of glasses. She goes to the lit doorway and peers in and sees a grand ball where everyone is beautifully dressed, every surface decorated, and musicians fill the space with their glorious sounds. The eldest princess hurries back to the royal bedchamber and wakes all her sisters, telling them to put on their best gowns and dancing shoes and follow her. They do, and they dance the night away. Just before dawn, a chime rings out, and the girls return home. Not long after they've all changed back into their night clothes and crawled, exhausted, into bed, the day nursemaid comes knocking on their door to gather them all for breakfast. The girls stumble to the dining room exhausted, and one even fell asleep face first into her porridge. While the princesses were all at breakfast, their nursemaid goes to tidy their room and finds, to her great surprise, 12 gowns with dirtied hems and 12 pairs of slippers with holes in the soles as if they'd been walked or danced clean through. Horrified, the nursemaid summons the launderers and cobblers and scolds them for letting the princess's best things fall to such ill repair, and to deal with them all immediately. The servants all obeyed, but with much confusion. The princesses were lethargic all day, complaining of headaches and fatigue, and so were let go back to bed. That night, as soon as they were all tucked in and lights put out and door locked, they immediately dressed in their new shoes and fresh gowns, moved the eldest princess's bed, and promptly returned down the underground path to find that the ball they'd previously attended was still underway, and again they danced all night. The king was perplexed after the nursemaids reported the princess's odd behavior and the state of their clothes and shoes to him. He decided to take matters into his own hands and sit vigil outside the bedchamber himself. To no avail. He locked his daughters in himself, sat awake all night, hearing nothing but what he assumed was the shuffling of final bed preparations. And yet, he unlocked the door in the morning to find dirtied gown hems, slippers worn to shreds, and 12 exhausted princesses. Out of frustration, the king offers the award of the princess's hands in marriage to any man in the kingdom wise enough to solve the mystery. Night after night, heroic volunteers showed up at the princess's bedchamber door, and night after night, the girls still wore out their shoes, and themselves. Now, this is the point in most traditional tellings of the story, where one of these heroic soldiers or princes solves the mystery, wins the king's favor, and marries the princess of his choice. I don't like that ending, because I don't like the idea of it stopping being their story and becoming his story. In my version, the princesses one day simply pack their things, slip down those stairs behind the corner bed one last time, bar the door behind them, and never return. They live a life of happiness and excess and zest for life, all while never stepping out the proper physical door to their room. Yes, I like that story much better. I see myself in that story. I know I'm pitied and perceived as lonely because I have not left my room nor my bed. I'm not lonely. I'm never alone. I slip down a metaphorical, and therefore much more accessible, stairway every day and dance and talk and laugh with my friends. But I never go blithely out that bedroom door. I know there's still a plague on. You see. A journal entry. It's fashionable, I believe, for people to keep journals of plague years, but I have both a distaste for journaling, yes, combined with an affinity for collecting pretty blank volumes and needing to in some way justify doing that. And a sincere lack of deep personal feeling here. You see, this is not my first plague year, not my first confinement. I would leave neither my room nor my bed as a child whenever a rash of childhood disease was about, for fear that my body would succumb badly to it. That fear was not irrational, as a simple cold or fever in the bodies of my schoolmates would be transformed into weeks or months of the same and worse in me. No one has ever identified an underlying cause, simply speculated about such, so erring on the side of caution simply became my custom. As the song The Invisible Republic is played, there is video projected on the screen behind the artist's bed. A ghostly image of the artist in a black gown is seen moving through cityscapes, landscapes, and images of lights. And here's another, more obscure tale for you. Have you heard the tale of the shepherd and the lake maiden? No? It's a tale about freedom and about boundaries and about respect. Timely, I think. I will tell this tale in the form of a poem. The Lake Maiden. There is no competition, no Olympian game, no sleight-of-hand trick, no performance or achievement that grants upon the winner, as first prize, my heart. In a glass case, locked in a golden locket, tied in satin ribbons, bound to the champion, the spoil to the victor. It belongs to me, this red muscle at the core of my being, and its removal would be a mortal wound. I would melt like a snowflake in your palm, wilt, a wildflower plucked from the earth. I only asked you to love me from where I am, without cages or chains, without uprooting me, removing me from my natural element. The tenderest trap still breaks my skin. The most beautiful gilded lock is still a lock, and you will not let me hold the key. Love me from where I am, from where I am hale and whole, and I will share the bounty of my gifts with you. Strike my skin with iron, and I will disappear. A journal entry. It's so often assumed that this life is a life of loneliness and chastity, bereft of any interaction save the occasional perfunctory intervention. I have and do know love and companionship and closeness. As a sequestered child, a visiting friend's daughter would be brought to my chamber after the long journey to our isolated home and slipped under the covers beside me. We were but children and innocent, but played at being adults in a romantic dynamic, her serenading me with the popular love songs of the day as I played, or did I, the swooning audience. I foisted my greedy heart upon characters in various fictions, sometimes conflating them with the people who portrayed or created them, to the point that I was admittedly ill-prepared for adult dalliances, unlike my peers who attended promenades and courted freely. But I have loved and do love, and do sometimes yearn for distant and or unrequited affections. Another fairy tale. And what, perchance, do you know of the tale of Rumpelstiltskin? Another maid locked away against her will? Not the way I tell it. This is called spinning. This maid, locked in a tower with the magic hands, whispering the truth, and if you listen, you may hear. I love this room, the tower, the lock. They are mine, my safety, my salvation. He only loved me the way he loves a good dinner. My value was not as a person, only in what I could do. I was sold to the highest bidder, and there I was. I believed in his powerlessness when I thought this place a prison. I was granted my freedom for doing as I was told, and ran home only to look into eyes thick with greed, my reflection dim and unimportant. He cried out for me on his deathbed. No concern of mine. I would not put myself in his reach again. What people often will not realize is that some things must be earned in this world. He never stopped, and he never changed. All that happened was that I was one day big enough and strong enough to remove myself from harm's way. I could reach the doorknob and work the lock myself. And so I locked myself in the tower, and I began to spin. Listen, children, there is something that no one can take away from you. My mind is my needle, my heart spins like a wheel, and every straw thrust at me is already transformed into gold. While the song Bitter Orange is played, the artist is reclining in bed, eyes closed as if in a dream. Above her, the video screen shows images of various cityscapes, and her image is superimposed, dancing over the images. I do not count the days. These are not numbers that matter to me. I mark the days. I recall the days. I recall series of events, feelings, people. I recall all the small things that make up a life that transpired despite the fact that I left neither my room nor my bed.